Well, back for his semi-annual visit to discuss climate-related developments and concerns is good friend Dr. Jeff Andreessen, the state climatologist for Michigan and a professor in the MSU Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Science. Jeff, always great to catch up with you at this time of the year, and welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks. It's great to be back.
I always like to mention, too, your work is funded in part by our good friends at MSU Ag Bioresearch and MSU Extension.
Absolutely. It's good to give them props here as well.
I reviewed our notes from last year on our chat, and we were talking about the receding El Nino and the likelihood of an emerging La Nina that would have happened last fall and winter. Did that happen, and was it a strong La Nina?
It did happen, but it was a marginal event. And actually, I won't say it surprised the forecasters a little bit, but it was initially thought that it would be a bigger event than what we actually observed. So, yes, it was a La Nina, but it was fairly weak. And the impacts with it as a result were fairly muted, at least versus what they can be.
Well, one of the things we talked about in the context of the drought in California, but I know there are a lot of reasons for that drought being reduced, but La Nina was one of those, right?
It certainly was, and I think if we look in at least in the United States, that might be the single greatest change or impact, weather-related impact here over the last, well, maybe the last year, where we went from record-breaking extreme drought in portions of California and the Southwest to almost to excess in just a matter of months. And we had one after another systems out of the subtropical Pacific that brought moisture and in many cases ended the drought. But it just for it to take place that rapidly is something extraordinary. So big changes. And if we look at the drought maps and look back, it's amazing to see that reflected in how much or how little now drought there is really across much of the United States.
Yeah, you mentioned the drought mapping. I think the percentage of severe drought areas on that mapping is the lowest it's ever been since they started the mapping.
Certainly in my professional career, I don't think I've ever seen so little color or so little on the map. And again, that's a good thing, but we have to remember, too, there's the other side of the coin, and there is such a thing as or too much of a good thing.
Well, we're going to come back to too much of a good thing for the state of Michigan in the second part of this interview, but let's talk about another issue that's been much in the news, and that's the reefs and the bleaching of the reefs, the Great Barrier Reef, that treasure off the coast of Australia. Quite a concern for climatologists, quite a concern for everybody.
It really is, and it's these are very unique treasures, ecological treasures, and with the die down or die back and loss of some of these areas, probably and maybe a number of factors involved, but certainly warming ocean temperatures, increased acidity, perhaps there's a lot of research taking place to try to better understand this, but one unavoidable conclusion based on the observations is that in many these reefs are dying back, at least in many places, including the Great Barrier, which is, again, it's just a very, very unique place.
On that whole reef issue, you read from some of the scientists who have been working on the reef their entire lives, but the prognosis is not at all optimistic about this reversing itself anytime soon.
No. Well, it's important to remember, especially for things like ocean temperatures, that it takes water is a great thermal mass, and it takes a long time either for it to heat up or to cool down. And what we're seeing now is a reflection of a long term trend. It's towards a warmer world, and it's a part of that. It took longer than it did for the air temperatures, but that's happening now as well.
My guest is Jeff Andreessen. He's the state climatologist for Michigan. Another climate-related, weather-related issue, much in the news. The New York Times has been doing a great deal with this of late, but that would be the Antarctic ice shelf. The Ross ice shelf and areas around that are melting.
They are, and there are a few exceptions in the world where we don't see as much melting or there's an increase in glaciation, but those are rare exceptions in the vast majority of the world. The cryosphere and ice is melting, and that's also certainly true in the northern hemisphere across the Arctic. By every measure, by every standard that we have, there is a reduction, both in the amount and the duration of ice and receding glaciers. they are a direct symptom or result of the increasing air temperatures. And it varies by region across the world, but there's no question that the ice is melting. And, of course, as a result of that, we're seeing an increase in sea level as well.
Well, you mentioned the tundra in that area, not just Antarctica, but one issue is the rising sea levels from the melting of the, but another is the release of things that have been frozen in the soil, and sometimes pretty toxic substances that have been frozen for centuries, for eons.
And, well, even in a step further, one of the fears is that in much of the Arctic or in subarctic areas of the world that we've had a great deal of organic matter there. Sort of frozen, suspended, and when it warms up, we'll get further oxidation of that and release more methane, carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Of course, there's a positive feedback loop and basically make the problem worse than it was originally. So there's a lot of what ifs and a lot of potential impacts that would result from this melting.
Let's come back to the rising sea levels. We've talked in the past, cities like Boston, like New York, like Miami, are already taking precautions because they've already recorded the rise. And it really jeopardizes their infrastructure. It jeopardizes a lot of things on those coastal cities.
It really does. And some climate researchers believe that rising sea level may be the most expensive problem that we have with our environmental changes that are taking place in the rising sea levels. We have to remember, too, that a large fraction of our global population lives on or near coastlines. And as those sea levels increase, it just creates all sorts of problems that require very, very elaborate and sometimes very, very expensive solutions, or at least to try to attempt to slow and in Miami we're seeing that now. New Orleans we've seen that as well. So it's not like it's something projected for the future. This is actually happening now.
Well, it seems like whatever topic we hit, whether it's the reefs, whether it's the melting of the ice sheets or ice caps or what have you, you keep mentioning research. There's quite a bit of concern. There's a proposed 2018 budget by the current administration that's going to dramatically reduce funding for some agencies that do an awful lot of this research. How concerned are you?
Well, very, very, very concerned. And I think everybody at certainly our community here at MSU, we all have to collectively be worried about this. Of course, a great deal will depend on what happens over the next several months with Congress and our local and regional politicians in terms of what they prioritize. But at least the budgets that are out there right now, the proposed budgets for the upcoming fiscal year, are quite disturbing, at least in terms of many environmental related programs, and it goes beyond that. But research dollars and just government support. Many government organizations would see major, major cutbacks. So I think, well, we do need to be concerned about this, and we'll see what happens here over the next several months.
Yeah, a lot of people hear about EPA cuts. They hear about NASA cuts. They hear about NOAA cuts, USDA cuts. But what a lot of people don't realize, some of the other agencies, like the National Institutes of Health, for example, those are research dollars that are going to be cut as well, but they're not much in the news.
No, and we will hear about them if these cuts do survive and get through. Ultimately, places like MSU that rely heavily on externally funded driven research, it's a major, major problem and dilemma for us, and that's true. That's true at all academia, and one would have to think that if these cuts went through, the immediate impacts would be on governmental departments, organizations, but ultimately it would influence us here too, no question.
Well, I'm talking climate with Dr. Jeff Andreessen, the state climatologist for Michigan, a professor in the MSU Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Science. Jeff, it used to be the Department of Geography. Now you've got this long name. Talk a little bit to our listeners about your department and why the new name.
Well, it's we certainly still have geographers. We always will. But it also is a reflection of who we are. And we have a very diverse set of expertise and interests in our department. And that does include certainly geography. But we also have people who look at human environment interactions and social science related issues to physical sciences like climatology and soils and landscapes. And so I think it's probably a better reflection of who we are, and it's again a diverse and an integrated type of department. And it's a for research like climate research that I'm involved with, it's a great place to be. We don't have to go very far to find colleagues that can take on some of the challenges from the different aspects.
Well, it seems like a lot of students are drawn to sort of this GPS, the spatial, because, I mean, using drone technology, satellite technology, the computer, I mean, for these young millennials, I mean, this is right in their wheelhouse.
It really is, both the technology and the realization that so much of what we do and our systems have some spatial aspect to them, and better understanding of that is necessary and probably will be even more necessary in the future. So this is a way, again, we train students to try and be able to use that technology, develop a skill, and we've been pretty proud of recently, especially our track record in getting people out and getting good jobs and good positions in the real world.
Yeah, the exciting developments over in the Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Science. Jeff, one of your favorite topics, agriculture. We'll come to Michigan here. We talked about drought going away across a good part of the United States, but a lot of water. How are our producers faring as we move into June and July?
Well, we're better than we were. We would have talked a month ago. I think there would have been a lot more nervousness. But we had a very wet spring coming in, and that delayed field work up until really just the last couple weeks. But we've got a lot done, and so yes, there are still a few spots which planting has been still a challenge, and weeds. But we're much better off than we were given the recent drier conditions. The other big event of note, we had a damaging frost freeze event on the 8th and 9th of May that caused it looks like a variety of problems, but there is some damage. We don't know how much yet. Won't probably for some time, but in some areas it was significant. While in others that had frost protection, it appears to be relatively little or no damage. So that's an interesting observation as well. But other than that, we've come through the spring fairly well, and there's more optimism about where we're headed over the next weeks and months. One of the interesting observations here in this spring's freeze event was that many growers now have some form of frost protection method or technology that they didn't have in years past, and since the big freeze event in 2012 or series of freeze events, many growers have installed some form of protection from freeze or spring freezes and made the economic investment. And either depending on the crop type, that ranges from sprinklers and water for crops that are on the ground to forced convection or big fans, typically for tree fruit. And what we've seen this year, even with temperatures as cold as they were, that they've been very effective in preventing damage. So we have, again, looking at bud survival and so forth from these freezes, we know that in some cases it was severe where it was unprotected, but in areas that did have the protection, it looks like it did a pretty good job. So my guess is that we'll see more and more of that with time develop. And again, it's a big investment for the grower, but I think they see that if it's effective and it is worth the investment to keep a crop out there. So that's certainly one of the trends in the industry that is noticeable or visible.
Well, one positive, as you well know, about all the moisture is that moisture content in the soil is up. I mean, people are not worried about soil profiles and what have you, but it's the excess water that's the issue.
It is, and we had a lot of difficulty. We do in Michigan to some extent almost every year have some areas because of the, especially areas in heavy soils that hold more water or take longer to dry out. But this year, because of all the excessive precipitation, some areas received more than 200% of normal rain since the beginning of March, or precipitation, I should say. Some of it wasn't all liquid, but that left things very, very soggy, and again, planting was delayed, and weeds are a major, major problem because we just can't get out and get the work that needs to be done completed. But That said, the last 2 to 3 weeks have been relatively drier. It's been cool, but certainly allowed a lot to happen quickly. So there's still, I think, reason for optimism. There are a few places that are still facing challenges with too much water. But by and large, as a state, I think we've come out better than probably would have been anticipated here just a couple weeks ago.
Another topic that we hit every year has to do with water as well. That's a factor. But lake levels are still up. Maybe they're up a little bit higher after all of this precipitation.
They remain above normal. We're now more than 2 years since we've been above normal and had the huge change, of course, from way below to above. And, of course, if you look at where the water comes and goes, it's a balance of the precipitation and what evaporates is the major balance. And on the input side, as we mentioned, we've had above normal precip for some time. So the lakes likely, they're all above normal now. And actually, it's worth noting that there were major increases recently in the lower lakes, especially Lake Ontario, in recent months. But all of the upper lakes certainly still remain well above their long-term normals and almost certainly will continue above normal for much, if not all, of the remainder of the year. At least that's the outlook of right now, and a lot will depend on how much precip we have over the warm season. But right now, most, even looking at the outlooks and the climatology, still anticipated to stay above the long-term normals for yet another several months.
Yeah, I'm reminded as you're answering the question, the Army Corps of Engineers keeps a real nice record of lake levels almost on a weekly basis. But it occurred to me also, as I was thinking about that, this is a question I've never asked you as many times as you've been on the program. But some of our listeners may say, okay, Dr. Andreessen, if I kind of want to follow weather trends and what have you, I mean, what are two or three sources that I can go to on my computer on a regular basis and follow some of this stuff?
Well, there are several options for that one, probably longer than you have. But you mentioned the Corps of Engineers, at least for the lake levels. That's where I go. And NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, has a site that accompanies that to look at things like how much ice covers a lake in the winter, the water temperatures. That's another interesting one that they monitor. But the Corps of Engineers really are charged with those actual measurements of how high or low the lakes are, and that's a good one. And that's available from the Corps of Engineer unit in Detroit. You can Google that, and you'll find that site. In terms of the weather and climate, one favorite of mine, I go to the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, which is located in Champaign, Urbana. They have a great site called Climate Watch, and that's a really quick way to look at where we've been and relative to normal for in a large scale. You can, if you want to get down into the weeds and the minutia, you can find that, and we can help you actually at the State Climatology Office as well. But the other place, NOAA has the Climate Prediction Center, which is the group responsible for many of our forecasts. And when you want to look ahead, that's where I go. They have a very, very useful site, and it has outlooks for a number of different time frames, ranging from even the short term all the way out to seasonal and even out a year in advance. And looking at things like El Nino Southern Oscillation, and it's a nice single site that tries to put all those pieces together.
Well, it's always a pleasure welcoming Dr. Jeff Andreessen to the show. Jeff is a state climatologist for Michigan, a professor in the Department of Geography, Environment, and Spatial Science at Michigan State University. His work is funded in part by our good friends at MSU Ag Bioresearch and MSU Extension. Jeff, always great to see you, and 6 months from now, we'll do it again.
Very good. Thanks for the opportunity.